25th of February. Let the record show that Senator Sturgeon-Lewski, Senator Jones, Senator Duncan, Senator Fisher are present, and that Senator Coghill, chairman, is also present. Today, we, as I told you the other day, we had on our schedule, our calendar had the several bills up, but we have a holdover, which is Senate Resolution Number 7, and it's my intent to follow as closely as possible, but if we don't take up a bill or we don't finish with the bill, that we'll bring it up the first of order of business the following day, unless there's some radical reason why we shouldn't do that. We will have committee substitute for Senate Bill 18, CRNA, an act creating the Anchorage Coastal Wildlife Refuge up after SR 7. Committee substitute for 62, CRNA, an act relating public access to recreational areas. Senate Joint Resolution 14, documentation of crews on U.S. processing vessels. We will continue to have testimony on 7, and then there's a problem that we have, folks, and that is that there's this hearing at 2, and I'm not too sure of how many of you want to go to that hearing. If I'm not going to have a committee, well, I'm going to recess and go up there, but we've got an awful lot of work to do, and if we plan to get any bills moving, why, I would like to continue the resource meeting. But the Cambridge Energy Briefing, which is has a tremendous amount of input, and so what's kind of the pleasure of the committee on that? I'll stay here alone if it's necessary.
What's your wish?
Well, my wish is to keep going, because we've got our portfolio is starting to get pretty full. Nobody has any particular issue on it, so we'll just continue on. Then we will now continue with testimony on Senate Resolution Number 7. Senate Number Resolution Number 7 is relating to to timber industry in southeastern Alaska. It's Jones Fakes Mueling. Let the record show that Senator Eliason is with us. Well, he was, or he is.
Get my glasses.
Oh. We had Gordon Williams, and we had John Galea testify, and so we can go to the list here if this is what we want to do, and we could have Stephen Kallick, is it? Steve? Is that pronounced right?
That's right.
You want to start off?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to comment on Senate Resolution 7. I'm staff attorney for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. My name is Stephen Kallick. I spoke to you again on SB 111 on Monday. I'm sure it'll come as no surprise to you that we oppose adoption of SR 7. Indeed, it would be a surprise if any interest group rose to support SR 7 as currently drafted. The resolution before you contains a succession of errors of both fact and law that lead the reader step by step from the path of logic to finally arrive at unsupportable conclusions. Even if these errors were corrected, the ultimate intent of this resolution, as near as it can be discerned, would be to support the current management of the Tongass National Forest as enshrined in Section 705 of the Alaska Lands Act. However, if all the interest groups involved in the controversy over current logging could agree on any one principle, it would be that management of the Tongass must change. Therefore, we respectfully request that this committee reject the proposed resolution. SR 7 contains facts of errors of fact and law. First, SR 7 should be rejected or completely rewritten because it builds its logic on a succession of errors and misstatements of fact and law. Please permit me to point some of these out. For example, at lines 8 to 12 of page 1, SR 7 implies that the purpose of the Tongass Timber Act of 1947 was to ratify the Forest Service's plans for creating a pulp industry in southeast Alaska. In reality, that law was aimed at protecting the then unresolved claims of Alaska Natives to their Aboriginal lands, and it required that all receipts from timber sales be held in a special fund pending resolution of the land claim dispute. Another similar but more egregious error appears in lines 13 to 15 of page 1. Here, SR 7 implies that the purpose of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was also to support logging in southeast Alaska. The actual purpose of that law, as we know full well, was to settle the land claims of Alaska Native people. The next section, lines 16 and 19, builds on the errors of the previous section that goes further off the path of logic. SR 7 is simply wrong where it asserts that the National Forest Management Act, a timber reform measure, exempts the Alaska pulp contracts from strict environmental requirements of the rest of that law. Instead, Section 15 of NFMA specifically commanded that the Forest Service bring the 50-year pulp contracts into compliance with environmental requirements. I might add for the record that 11 years later, this command has not yet been heeded by the Forest Service. In lines 20 to 24, SR 7 misstates the purpose of Section 705 of the Alaska Lands Act. According to the Forest Service, the agency in charge of interpreting its statutory duties, the real purpose of 705 is, as it says, to ensure that sufficient funds were available to supply 4.5 billion board feet of timber to the Tongass-dependent industry per decade. Any other interpretation of 705 is an exercise in wishful thinking. The three paragraphs which appear next, at lines 25 through 29 of page 1 and lines 1 through 4 of page 2, continue to misstate and mislead. True, timber employment has fallen precipitously in the region since the late 1970s. In fact, Tongass dependent industry now employs only about 1,350 people, according to the Forest Service. But why? The culprit is not a failure by the Forest Service to spend money, as SR 7 states. Since 1982, the Tongass timber subsidy has cost the government at least $250 million, averaging over $50 million per year. The culprit is also not a failure by the Forest Service to build enough logging roads. The Forest Service expected under the Tongass land plan to build 46.5 miles of logging roads annually at a cost of $18.8 million. Since 1982, they have built 47 miles of road annually at a cost of $16.4 million. Clearly, the goals of the Tongass plan have been met. Why then has Tongass-dependent timber industry lost so many jobs? SR7 does not state the obvious truth. World timber markets collapsed in 1980 through 81. Demand for Alaska pulp continues to decline as other products and sources substitute for its uses. Furthermore, in Alaska, native logging operations have displaced half of the previous market for Tongass timber. The Forest Service has supplied plenty of timber from the Tongass, more than 450 million board feet per year, but it cannot supply demand for that timber. In response to allegations similar to the ones contained in the section of SR 7, the Forest Service has said two very important things. First, it reported to Congress last year that the Alaska Lands Act provided, I'm quoting now, no guarantee of profit or continuing timber markets. Second, in response to congressional questioning during oversight hearings on Tongass problems last year, the Forest Service stated that, quote, no amount of Alaska Lands Act subsidies could have maintained the timber industry employment at historic levels. The pulp mills have created a scapegoat in the Forest Service expenditures of the Tongass timber subsidy and are using this scapegoat to push for more money. The last section of SR 7, before the conclusions, goes on to state that the Forest Service has failed to honor its commitments to the timber industry. As you can see from the foregoing, however, whatever commitments the Forest Service has made to the timber industry, particularly the pulp mills, have been honored. What this section of SR 7 really asks for is a change from existing law and policy. It says, in essence, that we must guarantee a profit to the pulp mills or do away with our existing wilderness areas. Of course, this notion is absurd. The conclusions of SR 7 make no sense either. Lines 11 through 14 on page 2 repeat the discredited fantasy that the Forest Service has failed to spend enough on the costly timber program on the Tongass. Then, lines 15 through 21 on page 2 discuss the timber land base and the timber supply in the Tongass. Yet there is no problem with Tongass timber supplies. The Forest Service has provided more than the required 450 million board foot goal annually. Much of this timber has gone unsold, costing the Forest Service more than $40 million over the last 5 years. The problem with Tongass timber is demand, not supply. SR 7 says nothing about timber demand. SR 7 will do nothing about timber demand. Finally, SR 7 ought to be phrased in a straightforward manner. It conveys an erroneous message that it supports existing law. Instead, SR 7 actually supports radical changes in current law and policy. SEAC agrees that major changes are needed in the Tongass timber program. We respectfully request that this committee consider asking Congress to take another look at the Tongass Timber Program. As others have suggested, let's try to find a sustainable, profitable, non-developed, non-dependent timber industry that will employ Alaskans. We don't have one now. No interest group using resources from the Tongass is satisfied with the current management program. SR7 is merely an extension of the arguments advanced by the two pulp mills and their subsidiaries through the Alaska Loggers Association over the last few years. Essentially, the pulp mills want more money to be given to them to build roads in their contract areas, and they object to other uses to which the Forest Service has applied the Tongass timber subsidies, which I might add includes pre-roading for small business timber sales that go to the very independent timber operators who had to bring a lawsuit to protect themselves before. As you know, the Reed Brothers lawsuit was decided in 1981. SEAC, the commercial fishing groups, Sea Alaska, and a number of village-based native corporations, and 14 Southeast Alaska rural communities have said that the current law and policy governing Forest Service management of the Tongass fails to protect other resources or resource users and should be changed. These communities include Angoon, Hoonah, Yakutat, Pelican, Tenneke Springs, Craig, Heidelberg, Point Baker, Port Protection, Gustavus, Port Alexander, Edna Bay, Kuprinoff, and Elfin Cove. Many of these groups and communities have objected to the manner in which the Forest Service spends its Tongass timber subsidies. SEAC has specifically supported measures to return Tongass timber subsidies to the appropriation oversight process in Congress. We want to see the money spent responsibly. A bill doing just that will be introduced in Congress next week. If the Alaska Senate is indeed concerned that the Forest Service has failed to spend money properly, then it should offer support for this measure, which will be known as the Tongass Timber Reform Act of 1987. In conclusion, we hope you will reject SR7 as currently drafted. It is plagued with errors of fact and law, and appears to support a Tongass timber program that is satisfactory to no interest group. Instead, we hope you will consider and adopt a resolution supporting our efforts to return Tongass timber expenditures to the much-needed scrutiny of congressional appropriations oversight. Thank you for the opportunity to make these remarks.
Thank you, Steve. And is there any senator that wishes to ask a question? Thank you. Let the record show that Senator Zaroff has also graced us with his presence. The next witness is Mike Stanley. Mike Stanley, not here. Richard Heller. State your name, Richard, and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Richard Heller, and I am chair of the Alaska chapter of the Sierra Club. Before I begin my testimony, there's a friend of mine who couldn't be here today who has submitted written testimony that I would like to give to the committee at this time. And if I could, I'd like to read his opening paragraph. This is from Cliff Lowball, a Juneau resident. After 30 years of involvement in the U.S. Forest Service public involvement planning process on the Tongass National Forest as a private citizen, I strongly oppose this resolution except the statement requesting public hearings in the state of Alaska. Before passing such a resolution, this committee should study the records of the Oversight Committee hearings on the Tongass National Forest by the United States Congress in May of 1986. And that's just his opening statement, and I'll let you read the rest of it. I'm here this afternoon to urge you to defeat Senate Resolution Number 7. The reason that I think it should be defeated is I think it represents a narrow point of view about the Tongass and perhaps even a distorted description of the present situation in the Tongass. It ignores other interest groups and simply puts forth the position of the two pulp mills in Southeast Alaska. Of course, the major issue in this resolution and to many people in the Tongass is jobs. As SR7 points out, there has been a decline in jobs in two pulp mills. in southeast Alaska, but it does not point out that on native lands there has been an increase in jobs, resulting in roughly the same number of jobs overall in southeast today, in the timber industry today in southeast as before. So what we're really talking about is pulp mill employment. If you read Senate Resolution 7, it implies that wilderness designations in southeast Alaska is the reason for the decline in jobs. This is simply not true. 86% of the wilderness areas in the Congress National Forest are unsuitable for timber harvest. That's 86% of the wilderness areas. The Alaska Pulp Corporation, Ketchikan Pulp Corporation were virtually untouched by the wilderness designations. The example that's often used is Admiralty Island. We locked up all the timber on Admiralty Island. Admiralty Island was not in contract area for Alaska Pulp or Ketchikan Pulp. And I think that if you really look at the situation, I don't believe that you can produce a credible economic study that demonstrates that wilderness designations in southeast or in the Tongass are the reason for the decline in jobs. It's simply not the reason. SR 7 also implies that the lack of road building by the Forest Service is another reason. Well, the Forest Service, according to the figures that I came up with, spent $231 million between 1982 and 1986 on road building. They built an average of 47 miles per year, and they offered twice as much timber as was cut. So I don't think you can blame it on the lack of roads. So what is the real reason for the decline in pulp mill jobs? This may come as a shock to some people, but there has been a serious decline in demand and an increased competition in foreign countries. That is the reason that jobs have declined. It's simply the law of supply and demand in action. The Forest Service has stated that no amount of subsidy could have maintained pulp mill employment given the market conditions. Now, that seems pretty straightforward to me, and that's coming from the Forest Service, and that's not coming from the Sierra Club or from SEAC. That's the Forest Service saying that no amount of subsidy would have been enough. And I think that they're correct in that, and I think any credible economic study would show the same thing. SR 7 does not talk about technological improvements at the mill. We know that that's happening in every industry, and I think it's also happening in the timber industry in Southeast. It takes fewer employees to do the same amount of work as was done before. But still, Alaska Pulp Company and Ketchikan Pulp keep demanding more. They're subsidized to an unbelievable extent already, and this has become a way of life for this industry in Southeast. And personally, I'm a small businessman here in Juneau, and I am struggling to survive at where the economy is right now. And when I pick up the newspaper and read about the sort of my tax money that I can barely afford to send to Washington is being sent to Alaska Pulp Corporation, a Japanese multinational, I mean, it just outrages me. I just can't believe that that's where my money is going. And I think it's not just me that feels this way. I think the taxpayers of this country are beginning to realize what's going on here. They're getting weary of this subsidy. And they're frankly balking at attempts to guarantee a profit for these two pulp mills. It's not a reasonable thing to ask the taxpayers to do. The figures that I've seen give estimates of $35,000 to $50,000 per job that is spent in Southeast Alaska for these jobs. And not to mention the cost of the state for unemployment checks sent to Washington and Oregon for many of the workers. I think that's, nobody is talking about that. And I think that we simply cannot afford this policy any longer. It's bad public policy. At the same time, there are 14 communities in South that said they're not happy with what's going on. As Steve said earlier, he named those communities, and I think they have legitimate concerns. Commercial fishermen, sportsmen's groups, the tourism industry, And conservationists, of course, are really concerned about the future of the Tongass. And it's a real serious issue that's facing us. But does SR 7 address these concerns? No, it does not address any of these concerns. The only thing that SR 7 does is put forth the point of view of the two pulp mills. Now, I agree that they should be heard and they're entitled to their opinion, but that's not the whole story. There's much more going on, and I think if you look at the oversight hearings from last summer, you'll realize that there's a lot more to it than what SR 7 would lead you to believe. I think that SR 7 ignores the interests of these people that I mentioned before, the commercial fishermen, the sportsmen's groups, the tourism industry. And because of that, I think that SR 7 should be defeated. I think it gives an unrealistic analysis of the situation in the Tongass National Forest, and it does not offer any creative solutions to the problems. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Richard. Is there any questions of any of the senators? Senator Jones?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Heller, are you saying that there's no other timber industry in Alaska except the pulp mill ever on the Tongass pulp mills?
Absolutely not. I think that Mr. Chair. I think that is what is implied in SR 7, that the only thing that's going on is the decline in pulp mill jobs. The fact is, we have a tremendous increase on native lands, and there is a lot of timber being cut.
What is pulp mills? I see timber industry, but I don't see pulp mills.
Well, that's one of my problems with the Mr. Chair. One of the problems with the resolution is it says timber industry, but it describes pulp mills. I think that's the reason I say it's misleading. If you break down what's happening and what part of the industry, I think it's a lot more complicated than what SR 7 would lead you to believe.
Okay, you talk about the cost of negative. But you realize, of course, that wilderness costs us money, costs the industry money. We're forced into marginal, industry is forced into marginal timber areas that it would normally be in. The environmental constraints on the industry over the past few years have increased the cost. All right. On top of that, would you have us now export round log? Because if we export round log, we could be in the positive range, you see, the timber industry, as the native expressions do now. You see, they do all right with the round log. Would you have us not support primary manufacturer and ship the jobs overseas out of Alaska? Mm-hmm. Now, that could be a solution. Would you have us do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, you've raised three issues here. The first one, wilderness, the fact that wilderness designation has caused a greater cost for the timber industry. I think I addressed that earlier. I don't think that can be proven. I think that there's been several economic studies that have looked at this that simply state that that's not the case, that you're talking about supply and demand. I don't think that you can show that wilderness is the reason for the increased cost of the pulp mill. As far as environmental regulations are concerned, I think we should realize that the Tongass National Forest is the least regulated of any national forest in the country. It is the only one that is not in compliance with the Forest Management Practices Act. It has not been since the beginning. So I don't think that we can use that. Sure, there are environmental regulations, but I don't think that there's anyone who would want to do away with those. I think they're there for good reasons. We don't want to just destroy the place. I don't think anybody's promoting that. And as far as the round logs, no, I don't think we should support export of round logs by the pulp mills. If, in fact, you are concerned about jobs, I think the primary manufacturer or the that was the whole reason for not exporting in the round. So I would not be in favor of that.
Any other questions? Senator Lassen,
Chairman,
Senator Fisher.
You do make some good points, but I'd just like to clarify one thing, and I sort of resent the fact that there's always the implication that you'll make reference to the fact that this is a Japanese multinational corporation who actually runs a mill. The inference is that there are Japanese people who are operating that mill. That's the furthest thing from the truth. Sitka is operated, I don't believe there's more than half a dozen Japanese people in that mill. That's the way it's been all the time. There's 400 people, they're Americans, they're Alaskans, and they're paying their taxes and they're working. So the impression that I feel that you're trying to make is the fact that it's owned by Japanese and there's no benefits to the American public in that regard. And I think it's you might have looked at the financial end of it, but I don't believe you looked into it thoroughly enough that Japanese corporations losing money. It's a multinational corporations that losing money in Alaska. They've lost millions of dollars in the last few years. So they're not here to make a profit. They're here to survive. So they're not raping the state of Alaska, taking that timber and putting it in the Japanese economy and making a profit. They're actually losing money. All the figures I've ever seen reflect that. So there's nothing wrong with the Japanese owning a pulp mill if the American people are running it. Any different than in an American fisherman out there who are harvesting the fish and delivering them to a processor, what we call joint ventures. At least we're getting a part of the action. American people are getting the jobs. Hoping someday, of course, we can meet them on the beach, but nevertheless, it's a step in the right direction. But to infer that because the mill is owned by Japanese interests, to infer that they're making a profit at that mill and it's benefiting only the Japanese is totally false.
Mr. Chair, can I respond to that?
Yes, just briefly.
Well, I certainly did not intend to imply that there's anything wrong with the Japanese owning pulp mill in southeast Alaska. I'm not opposed to that at all. What I said was the American taxpayers are subsidizing the pulp mills, and I don't think anybody would argue with that. The $50 million a year that's being spent by the Forest Service is coming from taxpayers' dollars. They are going to support this industry. It doesn't matter if it's Japanese, but I think that that does make it a little bit harder to swallow that if there are profits, that they're not going to be here, they're going to be in Japan. And if the taxpayers have to guarantee a profit for the pulp mill, why can't the profit go to the taxpayers? I mean, like I said, I'm a businessman. I would like that sort of thing done for me. If someone would help out my business right now, it'd be really good. But there's no resolution to before the Senate to help out my business.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elias. The whole point being is if this pulp mill owned by Japanese interests is actually making a profit, you have a very valid point. But they're losing money, whether they're being subsidized or not. The fact is, the inference is that what you're, by referring to Japanese owned pulp mill, you're saying in effect that, well, they're raping the lands, the resources owned by Japanese. You're not saying they're losing millions of dollars a year. You're not saying that. You're inferring that they're making a profit at the expense of the subsidy, which in fact they aren't. That's the point.
Well, what I'm saying is, it goes back to what I said earlier about my tax dollars. It's not the fact that it's Japanese who own it. It's the fact that my tax dollars are being wasted on this. Whether or not they're making a profit has nothing to do with the amount of money that's going in, and the pulp mills want more money.
Whether or not they're Japanese owned doesn't make that much difference at this point if they're not making any money. That's the issue I have. That's the point I'm making. To infer that Japanese are, any different than others, that they have come into Alaska to take advantage of the Alaska people and Alaska resources is not true. The other point is, you are correct to the substitute. But let's not cloud the issue by saying it's owned by Japanese or it's owned by the Germans or owned by anyone else. If they were making a profit, you'd have a valid point, but they're not.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my only point is that I think there is, in my opinion, the difference between a subsidy going to an American-owned industry and a Japanese-owned industry, but it's just my opinion.
Your point's well taken. Senator Fisher.
No, just kind of a curiosity, you had mentioned the subsidy. This seems to be the basis. Let's assume that the subsidy is needed for the plants to survive, since you had mentioned the plants. Is it your opinion that we should urge the subsidy to stop and let all those people be without jobs? Are you saying that we're not getting any value for the subsidy by way of jobs for Alaskans? Is that what I hear you saying?
What I'm saying is that the system is not working, that if the intention of Section 705 was to do what SR 7 says, it's not working. We agree that it's not working. We believe that we should look for creative solutions to what's going on in the Tongass, that all the various interest groups should sit down and try to work out a viable timber industry that does not require this sort of subsidy. We feel like that we are locked into a variety of things that happened in the past that are not relevant to the situation today, and we need to clear that out, and or else we're just going to continue along this line and go through this over and over.
Thank you very much. We're going to try and move the pace a little bit faster if we can. I'm going to ask Jim Clark from Alaska Lumber Association to come up and give his testimony, and maybe after then we can go to maybe 5 or 6 minutes. At 35 minutes, and we had two people testify, and I've got four bills that I'd like to move today if at all possible. So we can kind of quicken our pace a little bit. And if any of you in the committee are interested in going to the Cambridge briefing, Dick.
Mr. Chairman, let me pass out my testimony. I'll try to summarize it along with a letter from Congressman Mrazek to his colleagues.
Jim, why don't you just give it to Elizabeth Clay on TV?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim Clark. I represent the Alaska Loggers Association, which supports SR 7 and would like to commend the sponsors of the bill for putting it forward. The Mrazek letter, which I presented to you, I think explains why this bill is necessary. After more hearings than any bill at the time, except for the Civil Rights Bill of 1965, and hearing the same arguments that you've heard today, the Alaska Congress of the United States reached a compromise on Southeast Alaska as part of the Alaska Lands Bill that did two things. It created Section 703, which designated 5.3 million acres of wilderness, and provided in Section 705 for a mechanism to cover the gap in the land base that was created. Now, it's often a misconception, as the previous speaker had, and indeed Congressman Seiberling had, that if the area is not in the contract area, then it doesn't have any impact on the timber industry. Because of the way in which sustained yield works, figured on the entire timber base, and the fact that areas that go into wilderness are taken out of the timber base, the sustained yield calculations are dramatically changed. And what happened here is that when we put 5.3 million acres into wilderness, we cut the allowable cut to 360 million board feet that could be sustained under ordinary means. And the previous 10-year average of harvesting had been 450 million board feet, which left a gap of about 90 million board feet. And because Congress wanted to maintain jobs, which is going to be what I'd like to direct my remarks to, and create the wilderness, it said we'll make up the difference. We are willing to pay to maintain these jobs. The reason this resolution is needed is because, as you can see from the Mrazek letter, the environmental community, with whom the previous speaker suggested we sit down and talk, wants to do away with our half of the arrangement. Namely, they want to strike 705, they want to terminate the long-term sales, they want to create 122 new wilderness areas, and they want to come up with a program called avoidance of low-cost sales, which will in effect add a 60% surtax onto stumpage charges based upon Forest Service cost of producing timber. So it's that kind of drastic, extremist approach that reflected in Mrazek's letter and the bill that he's now introduced that really makes this resolution necessary. We would not want to go stir the waters on Section 705 because the deal is a deal. We did give up a wilderness area in return for the agreement on 705, and it's only because these groups want to strike what they agreed to at the time that this resolution is needed. I'd like to take up on a remark made by Senator Jones, which I think is the heart of the issue here, and that is primary manufacture. One need only look at the balance sheets for the regional and village corporations here, which operate Round Log Export. Do an excellent job, part of our industry. We fully support what they do. We're all part of the same industry. But we're broken into different segments. To the extent that we're able to capture the attention of Far Eastern markets with Round Log Export, that's good for Alaska as a whole, and it's good for our industry. But that segment of our industry is making money. The Round Log Export end of our industry was figured by the Alaska Department of Commerce in 1976, produces about 2.2 jobs per million board feet of timber. The primary manufacturer end of it, which includes the pulp mills and the sawmills, and anybody who takes a stick of timber from the Tongass National Forest is subject to this, produces about 10.2 jobs per million. And the difference between making a profit these days and not making a profit on Tongass is those 8 jobs per million board feet associated with primary manufacture. So that's what it's all about. The idea that this goes to the Japanese-owned pulp mills is true, but it goes through as a pass-through, because what we're doing is we're supporting the people. That money's paid out to the people who, I think as Senator Fisher was on to it, produce the value-added products. Now, we are operating on the same timber as the village corporations and the regional corporation. And if we could export the timber in the round, there's no reason why the pulp mills, the Japanese-owned pulp mill as well as the American-owned pulp mill, couldn't make a profit. It's by paying the workers in the sawmills and in the pulp mills that at this point in time we're not making a profit. Now, part of this and part of what we need to redirect our efforts to, and I have to add, the state of Alaska has been very, very helpful on this over the years, has been to try to get the Forest Service to funnel the money into the existing sales, the pulp mill sales and the sawmill sales that are here, in order to keep those programs going. What basically happened is the Forest Service has put some of the money into new sales that they put up, which are uneconomic to sell, and we've in effect spent more money than we've needed to. And I think we probably have wasted some in this program by running a dual program. On the one hand, we've had the normal Forest Service program with the existing industry treated for the most part as if 705 had never been passed, and on the other hand, new sales being put up that unfortunately didn't sell. So we've worked out some arrangements with the Forest Service. They're not going to put up roading in areas that probably won't sell now, and I think we'll come up with a more efficient means of spending the money. Nobody's in favor of wasting the money that is provided by the federal government. And I do agree with the last speaker that there are things that we can do to tighten up the program. We'll do it. But at the heart of this is the question of jobs. And if we do away with 705 and leave in the primary manufacturer requirement, we sing a death knell for the industry. If we want to make it efficient and if the real thing the environmentalists are after now is good economics and efficient economics, we can do that, but we send the jobs to the Orient. And in that regard, Senator Lyson's absolutely right. What's going on in Sitka is exactly what we're going to be after the Japanese to do in the trade bill that's going to be introduced in Congress, and that is to make capital investments in the United States and hire Americans to do the jobs in those plants. And that's what the Japanese are doing in automobile factories in California and other things that we're insisting upon to redress the balance of climate problems. They did that here. It was the very first Japanese national project. And I just ask you to consider one thing as part of this, and that is we are talking so much about foreign trade. The idea of foreign trade was, I guess, captured the State of the State address. That being the case, what signal do we send with this business of Japanese-owned pulp mills and they shouldn't make a profit? You know, if that's the attitude of Alaskans, how are we going to draw other investments to the state from foreign companies? So with that, Mr. Chairman, I probably talked too long, but I thank you for the opportunity to appear, and we very strenuously support the bill.
Thank you, Jim. Is there any questions of Mr. Clark?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Sturgelewski. Just
briefly, do you have a copy of the resolution?
The SR-7?
Yeah.
I don't write in front of me right now, Senator.
Could you?
I'm sorry, I should have had that.
We have some.
Here. Thanks.
If you turn to page 2, there's a couple of sections through the chair that I'd like to ask about if they weren't there, if it would make a difference, if, in a way, create a flag. page 2, lines 7 through 10, dealing with the wilderness and repealing of that if certain condition precedent wasn't met, and lines 17 and 18. Again, on the wilderness area, just it's that's very strong language. What would be the effect of this resolution without those?
Senator,
terms.
In your packet, you've got some proposed by the
maker. Oh dear, here we go.
By the
what
maker?
Would happen here?
I don't think that
does
on the second.
Let me
think.
I've
got to mark the first.
That doesn't address. I didn't feel that it did, though. I thought maybe there was a new one.
And 18, amendment number 2. It addresses part of your problem. The Second Amendment, Senator Turchelewski, does address the wilderness thing.
Senator, just to try to deal with your first point first, I don't think that's changed at all.
No,
by
it
the amendment.
Isn't changed.
Let me just say this: that I read that this way, and perhaps others may not, but I read it to say a deal's a deal. And what we exchanged was the as part of this program, and I just want to make one point clear. It sat on the desk for 4 months while the environmental community waited to see who won the election of 1980. And after looking at it, they went to Senator Tsongas, and after looking at the outcome of the November election in 1980, they went to Senator Tsongas and said, okay, we'll go along with this approach. And this had been the approach that passed the Senate. I'm talking about with 705 for 703, and it had passed the Senate in October of 1980. The election passed, and when Congress was called back in a lame duck session that year, as you recall, the House passed the bill. So it was with full knowledge of what was in here. There was an agreement by both sides, and I think that this makes the point. And perhaps it could have been made better or something. I don't want to speak to that, but it makes the point that we, the people of the state of Alaska, having entered an agreement with the federal government, have the institutional memory to remember what the agreement was about, and that we did exchange one section for another. And it really says, if you want to revoke one side of the deal, let's revoke it all, start from ground zero if you want us, rather than to simply say, okay, we don't like your side of the deal, so we're going to leave ours in place and we'll go negotiate about yours. I think it intends to address that point more than anything else. That's how I read it.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, just briefly, that it just seems to, where you really say, hey, we want you to honor your commitments, and that to me is the essential thing. And the other makes it, there are people that don't perhaps have that
recollection,
memory.
Sure.
And
I said
it seems
I
to come agree. Leaping out and let's get you in the eye. Thank you.
Any other
Senator,
questions?
I didn't answer your question with respect to the second point,
well,
but I do
believe
it's...
Well, the second has been recommended at change through an amendment.
Yeah. Senator Elias.
Chairman, Jim, I also have a marked up copy in regards to testimony given by the governor's office, I believe. Have you looked at that?
Have I looked at the testimony of the governor's office?
Suggested amendments. It's in my packet here.
Well, we're going to have Craig up next.
Maybe he hasn't testified yet.
He hasn't testified yet.
Okay, well, we'll wait.
I've seen the points that
he's
made.
I was wondering thought I'd missed the testimony before.
But I think the existing
got
amendments
in the packet
that Senator Jones has introduced to address those points.
Okay,
go ahead, Senator Jones.
The markup or the testimony of
the state?
The estate.
I do. Yes, Senator, I do.
I'd like to ask you on page 4. Were they at the bottom of page 2, address line 5 through 10? Line 5 through 10.
Okay.
Page 2. They asked, the word, the administration believes that it would be premature to adopt this language because administrative remedies still exist, which are being pursued. Do you have, is that an adequate assumption or is that adequate?
We have, there is no question that we are attempting to obtain, as an industry, we're attempting to obtain. But I believe that I'd almost flip this argument, and I agree with Mr. Lind, who's an excellent analyst of this process. Really acknowledge him as that. But I'd almost flip the argument by saying that by putting in this language and coming forward with this approach, the pressure would be increased upon the Forest Service to achieve an administrative, several administrative solutions, which we believe could be brought, could make it more efficient. So I think that actually the argument cuts the other way, at least in my opinion, that if that language is left, that it would put pressure on the Forest Service to achieve an administrative solution sooner rather than later.
All right. And our next assumption was between lines 15 and 18. As previously indicated, the administration does not support reopening NELCA change, and the language proposed here would require amendment of NELCA.
With your amendment on that area, I don't see how that language can be read to mean that anybody seeking a change, at least the timber industry, is not seeking change in 705. And from our point of view, you know, we're not, it is not we who are trying to open up ANILCA, and I think the Mrazek letter, which I've given out, shows where the impetus to open up ANILCA is coming from. In fact, what we're really saying is a deal's a deal. We can make 705 work better, but we don't want to strike one side of the agreement. We would agree, you know, if we, we're certainly not adverse at any moment of sitting down with any group and trying to work out anything, and perhaps there's language we could use, agree to, that would make 705 work better. But the key thing is, we think it's just totally unfair to strike to repeal it, as it would be equally unreasonable, let me say, for us to come in here today and say, you know, let's repeal 703 and do away with all those wilderness areas. Each side, having made an agreement in good faith, should stick with it.
Any other questions of Jim? Thank you, Mr. Clark. We're going to have Craig Lynn now give his testimony now that we've discussed it.
Maybe too late.
You can buzz through that. Well, we took 35 minutes for anti so far, and we've had 15 minutes for pros, so we're doing pretty good.
And this is the balanced presentation.
And this is the balanced presentation. Welcome, Craig, to our table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Craig Lind. I'm employed by the Division of Governmental Coordination Office of the Governor. I'm here today on behalf of the administration and concerned state agencies, including the Departments of Commerce and Economic Development, Natural Resources, Fish and Game, and Environmental Conservation. Senate Resolution Number 7 addresses a matter which has been of longstanding interest to the state of Alaska. In 1985, the state participated with other entities named in Section 706C of the ANILCA in a review of Tonga's forest management. This review was part of a reporting requirement placed on the Secretary of Agriculture by Congress in Section 706B of ANILCA. The timber industry, which depends on National Forest timber supplies in Southeast Alaska, was another participant in the review process, as were the Sea Alaska Corporation, the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, the Alaska Land Use Council, and representatives of the commercial fishing industry in Southeast Alaska. I expect that most, if not all, of these participants are represented here today. In May of last year, contributors to the 706B report, as well as people from a number of communities in Southeast Alaska, testified at congressional oversight hearings in Washington, D.C. For the record, I'm submitting the state's testimony which was presented at those hearings. As many of you are aware, there is a high degree of interest in Tonga's forest issues, both here in Alaska and in the lower 48 states.
As has already been recognized, Congress will be asked this year to amend or repeal Section 705 of the NELCA. This is the section which directs the Forest Service to provide a timber supply to the dependent timber industry and guarantees a minimum funding level outside of the normal federal appropriation process to enable the Forest Service to accomplish it. The congressional objective of this provision was to maintain employment in the dependent timber industry at pre-NELCA levels by providing a timber supply while ensuring that other resources of the forest were managed in accordance with the Congress Land Management Plan, or TLUMP, and applicable federal law. The administration does not support substantive changes in Section 705 at this time because it believes that provisions of TLUMP need to be more fully implemented before it can be determined how well ANILCA will solve the existing problems. The state has urged full ANILCA funding and that the funds be used more effectively. For example, road construction funds could be better targeted to excess timber, which is scheduled for harvest in the near future, rather than on administrative tie roads, which will provide access at some more distant time in the future. Inadequate implementation of TLUMP may also jeopardize the wildlife and fisheries values in the Tongass Forest, as well as water quality as it relates to fisheries and human consumption. An adequate monitoring program for water quality impacts, which might be associated with logging and road construction, will permit the refinement of existing management practices or the identification of new, more effective practices. We believe that legislation is premature while administrative remedies are available. Congress has directed the U.S. General Accounting Office to investigate Forest Service implementation of Section 705. It is our understanding that this investigation will be completed sometime next winter. Until this investigation is completed, Congress will not have the benefit of the independent and objective analysis that it has requested. We informed Congress last May that the state would continue to monitor the Forest Service's implementation of ANILCA. Attempts to amend 705 could lead to a new debate on other provisions of ANILCA. The administration does not want to encourage a reopening of ANILCA. If Congress considers amendments to Section 705, the administration will request that congressional hearings be conducted in Alaska, particularly in Southeast Alaska communities. As you can see, Senate Resolution 7 is largely consistent with current administration policy. We would like to suggest several changes of clarification, however, as follows. You've already touched on some of them, thanks, Mr. Clark. And earlier there was some discussion about what is the timber industry, and the comments on page 1, line 23, line 25, line 29 relate to that. It makes it clear that there are several sectors to the timber industry, and the one that ANILCA addresses is the industry that depends on federal timber supplies. Native corporations, of course, have their own timber. And I think that the rest of these line-specific comments have either been discussed or are fairly mundane. So I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to present this position paper.
Thank you, Craig. Is there any questions of the Craig? If not, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like on your proposed amendments, Craig. Page 2, line 5 to 10. Could you just run through that again?
Page 2
of the resolution, excuse me. Line 5 to 10 is kind of the area that's been restricted.
Right. I believe that this section does, you know, it's recognizing that if you're going to change something, you better take a look at the other part of ANILCA that relates to the Tongass. And I think that that's certainly realistic. But I think that the feeling was that we just didn't want to raise changing ANILCA as a possibility. You know, I suppose that's, you can make a good argument either way on that, but what we're looking at is not to get into the changes.
Any other questions, Mr. Lynn? If not, thank you, Craig. Go ahead. You guys got a caucus going?
No.
Nobody wanted to ask me a question.
Oh, I was just curious as to
the chair.
I heard Mr. Clark, I guess, explain. Maybe I can ask Mr. Clark again. What was your argument on the flip side of that? Can we ask him to come back up?
Jim, come on up and join the crowd at the table here. The question is, what's the flip side?
I mean, I understand the deal's the deal thing.
No, that we got across the Mr. Chairman, the question dealt with the administrative remedies and what we were doing in terms of pursuing administrative remedies.
And I think the point in Craig's testimony was that while we were pursuing administrative remedies, perhaps we ought not to be talking about any legislative remedies. Let me make it clear, I think that Craig thought we were trying to change 705. We are not. And so perhaps with that understood, there's no problem. But we will continue to try to get administrative remedies that will make the implementation of 705 more effective. And my point was that if we leave in lines 5 through 10, I think it helps add pressure to the Forest Service to come up with those administrative remedies. And I'm sure that perhaps it could be worded differently or something, but the key point is to keep the Forest Service working with us to come up with administrative solutions to make the money more effectively spent so we are able to do a better job maintaining jobs here.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Through the chair. Mr. Clark, if that's your intent, that ain't what it says. I mean, what it really says is, come on, let's get out there, and by golly, you do this, we're going to do that. And I think it's a kind of, to me, it does not say what you just said, that we should pursue administrative and, you know, a deal is a deal. I agree.
Senator Jones, you wish to respond?
Through the chair. We've
got fisticuffs.
Right now, there's a bill in Congress to do away with 705.
I will.
All right. And unless, you know, we make a point, I think, that if they're going to do away with 705, then they should also look at 703. Mm-hmm. And I think we should make that point, and we should make it now.
Mr. Craig. Chairman. Possibly another way to handle it would be just to have a statement that if Congress is to consider amending ANILCA, that it do so comprehensively and look at all of those sections of ANILCA that relate to the Tongass.
So that's a good point, except if you don't get to a point and point to what you're pointing to, sometimes they'll miss it. And in other words, what I'm saying is that if you get into too general position, and I think what's happening here is that what Senator Jones intending is intending that if you're going to open up that issue, then you open up the flip side of the issue. And there's a lot of other issues in ANILCA that could be open too.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jones.
And we're trying to keep from opening the thing up at all, just as a statement at this point.
Well, any other questions of these two gentlemen? If not, I'm going to limit the testimony 5 minutes per. We've had both sides, and I have Ken Leghorn. Is Ken here?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Could you, if you've got a paper, why you could submit it, if you could summarize your paper. We've been on this an hour, and I've got 5 items that I'd like to.
Yes, sir, I respect that. I've waited 3 hours.
I know.
And I've never.
Have you got a good education,
before.
Sir? Name here, give us your name for the record, you may start.
My name is Ken Leghorn. I am a co-owner and current president and general manager of Alaska Discovery Incorporated. I'm the past vice president of the Alaska Wilderness Guides Association, current member of the Alaska Visitor Association, Southeast Alaska Tourism Council. For 16 years, our company has been leading guided and outfitted trips by canoe, raft, kayak, backpack, and charter boat throughout Southeast Alaska. We operate out of Juneau, Sitka, Haines, Yakutat, Angoon, Wrangell, and Gustavus. We're the largest and the longest operating outfitter of such trips in the state. We are absolutely opposed to Senate Resolution Number 7. The major issue being addressed here is, should the federal government give subsidy to the timber industry as it is currently structured in Southeast Alaska? And whether the Alaska legislature should support this subsidy because it protects jobs for Alaskans. I believe the answer to both questions is clearly no. I believe the structure of the current timber industry here, supported by this resolution, gives away many jobs to non-Alaskans, prevents many small independent loggers and sawmills from being able to successfully compete for business survival here. And the large clear-cutting that is resulting from ANILCA Section 705 is starting to become a major problem for the growth of the Southeast Alaska tourism industry. Times have changed since 1947, when the Tongass Timber Act was first created. 40 years ago, I think there was a plausible need to help the timber industry get started here. That was 40 years ago. In this decade, fishing and tourism contribute far more to our economy, and they will continue to do so, than timber harvesting does. The Forest Service has said that no level of subsidy will be able to turn around the market forces that make federal timber sales on the Tongass so grossly uneconomic. Wilderness designations certainly have had no effect on these economic forces, since less than 9% of the Tongass's prime timber is in wilderness. The problem, as has been stated earlier, is with the demand for timber, not its supply. These wilderness designations, and I think this is new information for a lot of people, are becoming of immense benefit to the tourism industry in promoting Alaska to potential visitors and in providing a top quality experience why they are here. We are really starting to depend on these wilderness areas, especially as the total land base available for tourism shrinks. In the future, we will need more and larger official wilderness areas, not less. I just had a meeting with someone in the Forest Service today, and the whole subject of it was just the tremendous growth in demand for recreation, outdoor recreation and tourism on the Tongass, and how are we going to handle it? I will skip the two examples from my own business that have shown how the current timber program has hurt our business, but we've had to enter a lawsuit to stop logging in one area where we operate, and we've had to stop doing trips in another area because of logging. The long-term economic viability of Southeast Alaska is clearly in fisheries and tourism, not in high-volume timber clear-cutting. Representative Don Young, we already heard testimony quoting him saying that the pulp mills in Ketchikan and Sitka will not probably be operating in 15 years. I feel that the scenery and the wildlife, however, will last forever. They will continue to be used by residents and tourists for eternity. Our own company has grown 300% in the last 5 years. We employ 15 Alaskan residents in the summer. We can hardly keep up with the demand. New tourism-related companies are forming every year. The new cruise ships are being added on. The cruise ship season is now from mid-May until the end of September. It's almost a six-month season. And the thing that always strikes me about it is it doesn't matter if people are coming to Alaska on a cruise ship or to come on one of Alaska Discovery's canoe trips. They are all coming for exactly the same reason, and that's because Alaska is the only place now in the country where they can have a phenomenal outdoor, quote, wilderness experience. Ask any of the hundreds of the large and small lodges, charter boats, cruise ship lines, hunting and fishing outfitters, air taxis, what product they are selling, and they all say the same thing. We're selling the wilderness experience, whether you're on a cruise ship or in a kayak. People take the extra time and money to come all the way to Alaska instead of some of the great national parks and forests in the western states for only one reason, to capture what they can't find in the lower 48 states. They will not come here if this Southeast Alaska looks like Oregon and Washington. And I know that as a fact. I talk to potential visitors on the phone every day of the week. I'm on the phone convincing them why they should come to Alaska and telling them what they're going to see when they get here. And I know what's important to them. The presence of large-scale industrial logging in Southeast Alaska, as it has been in British Columbia, is in direct and complete opposition to the long-term viability of our tourism industry. And I'm worried about it. We can't let this part of our state become a patchwork of clear cuts, especially when it takes our tax dollars to support it. I don't think most of you realize that the tourism industry is paying 3% of its adjusted gross income to the Forest Service for Forest Service user fees. The bus companies, Alaska Discovery type companies, the lodges, all that, are paying 3% of their adjusted gross as a fee to the Forest Service. At the same time, we have to watch that money in the general fund get turned around and be paid out to the timber industry, and we feel the timber industry is hurting our own business. We are paying our own way. We are supporting ourselves on public lands. I would rather let the market economy make its choice. The demand for recreation is going to continue to rise. In conclusion, rather than hastily passing this resolution, which I think is pretty one-sided, I really applaud the Alaska legislature looking at the situation on the Tongass and, before it does anything, researching some of these following questions. Why have most of the small local sawmills and independent loggers gone out of business here? Why was the lawsuit that was filed by the Reed Brothers Logging, which showed collusion on the part of Alaska Pulp and LPK to keep timber prices low in order to drive out the small businesses, why is that suit largely gone unanswered? What percent of logging jobs go to out-of-state residents? How can we correct this? the same time that logging-related jobs on federal lands have declined from 3,000 to 1,400 people in southeast Alaska due to depressed timber jobs, what has been the growth of tourism-related jobs? I can't tell you that. The numbers aren't there. It needs some research. If large-scale timber harvesting on the Tongass is a sunset industry with only 10 to 15 years left, what can we start doing now to restructure the industry to use a portion of our remaining old-growth forest here, which is the one that's suited for harvesting, using a portion of that to maintain a locally based long-term timber industry, the one that's going to last more than 10 years. I just think there's a lot of good solutions that could be found. There's different ways to spend this federal subsidy money to help Alaskan jobs, Alaskan timber interests, without following the arguments of the two pulp mills, which frankly I don't think are very fair to the rest of us. And in conclusion, I would just like to say, I hear so much about a deal is a deal with ANILCA that was passed in 1980. First of all, the Section 703-705 deal was very hastily drawn in the last weeks. It wasn't agreed to. Second of all, ANILCA is a piece of legislation, and a law is a law, is the way I see it. A bad law needs to be changed. A good law is kept on the books. I wasn't part of that deal. I'm not going to sit here and have people tell me, hey, a deal's a deal, Ken, we made 6 years ago. I wasn't a part of it. A lot of people weren't. I would like you to address the issue on the Tongass in an overall way. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. Is there any questions of any of the senators? Or the senators are up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ken, how many people do you employ annually?
In 15 people in the summertime.
Like full-time year-round?
Full-time year. We don't hire anyone in the wintertime except myself and our bookkeeper. And then for the four-month season, we hire 15 of our guides.
All local?
Mm-hmm. In fact, they have to be Alaskan residents.
Seems to be when I remember when I was in Sitka there for a while that it was a big deal for when tourists came in that they took a ride out to the sawmill or the pulp mill and went through and did a quick tour through that. They were just as happy there as seeing trees standing on the hillside.
Well, if you talk to the marketing people at the Division of Tourism or in any of the cruise ship companies, that's not what they're marketing in Alaska.
Thank you, Ken. Any other questions? If not, why we got two more, and then we stretched that 5 minutes to seven. Ken Gray, and then we've got Gail Yate, and I'm leaving Gail for the last, best for the last. Again.
Skip Gray.
Excuse me. Could you?
I'm Skip Gray. I apologize for not having anything prepared. I thought I was going to be out of town during this, and I just got back about a half hour ago and found out it was just not happening. So, I represent a group of about 1,300 people that call themselves Friends of Berners Bay. I'm co-chairman of that group. We're a group that formed in response to the Forest Service timber plans out here at the end of our road system to log in one of Juneau's favorite recreation areas. And I think the point I'm going to try to make today is this is just one instance of how ridiculous the Forest Service timber practices are and some of the results of them. As they're set up right now, their practices demand that they log places like Berners Bay, which has been classified by the Fish and Game as 8% of the whole Tongass National Forest with the highest fish and wildlife values. And it seems to me like a sane timber practice is not to log areas like that, nor is it to log favorite recreation areas close to population centers. With the subsidies that we're paying the timber industries to pay people, we could pay each logger that's presently out of work $30,000 a year or so to not do anything, which I think would be far preferable to have them out there cutting up our wilderness areas. And for better effect. It just seems ridiculous the amount of money the federal government is pouring into an industry that is failing and is bound to fail for the foreseeable future and should not be subsidized at the expense of our other resources that we can cash in on, as Ken was saying. His company may only hire 15 people, but there are a lot of other companies around like that, and like he says, the tour ship industries, which do bring a lot of money into the state, are marketing the same products. The Berners Bay area has also been classified as having significant recreation and scenic values by the Forest Service itself and the State Parks and Recreation Advisory Board. It just seems to point out the real problem behind this whole timber industry issue and how bad it's being managed and how things should be changed. And I would like to ask that you not support this resolution. Right now, nationally, this whole issue is turning in the timber industry in Southeast is almost a laughing stock nationally, and it's being looked at real hard in Congress, and I think it would just make the legislature look kind of silly to support something that that basically is probably going to be changed anyway. And I support Ken's idea that the legislature take a good hard look at all the issues involved before they do anything as rash as passing a resolution like this that's so one-sided and just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And I'm sorry I'm not more prepared, but
that's
kind of gets the main idea across.
Thank you, Skip. Is there any questions, Senator?
I'm just curious, is Berners Bay a wilderness area now?
No, it's not. The biggest share of it is classified LUD 3, I think it's called, which means basically maintained in a roadless state, not exactly a wilderness area, but there's one corner of it right here near the end of the road, which is in the Sawmill Creek area, is what we're most concerned with, also the Cowie and Davies area, creeks area, that somehow got kind of left out from that designation and changed to LUD 2, which means they can log there. And right now, that whole bay is a closed ecosystem, sort of. There's no road into it at all. And if they do extend the logging roads into that bay, it's going to totally change the whole ecosystem because then it will be accessible to the masses of sorts.
I remember had the impression that Berners Bay itself was a prime area for timber. So it seems to me that that would be a place to put a wilderness area, because there's very other multiple uses there, you know, I understand. It is a great area, but it seems rather strange that they would not designate that particular type of area where everyone would like to see put it in a wilderness area, but rather they go somewhere else and declare a wilderness area where there are multiple uses available to timber or to fisheries or whatever it might be. But I always thought the Berners Bay issue was that group you're talking about was not so much to prohibit logging in Berners Bay, but as I understand, to construct the pulp mill there to diversify the economy in general. I thought that was the reason.
The pulp mill was an issue that came up like 20 years ago or so, and the Sierra Club had a court suit against it and stopped it.
That was to build a pulp mill in Berners Bay.
Right. That's a long dead issue. Now the Forest Service just wants to do some logging in that area, and then the whole issue has resurfaced in the last couple of years, and we were forced to bring a lawsuit against them for not filing an environmental impact statement, and we were upheld in the courts.
But timber out there now owned by the Native Corporation, right?
Right. They own a good chunk of the area right around Echo Cove and out to Sawmill Creek.
The timber is located, actually.
The road would go through Gold Belt property, but the actual logging would be off to the side of that.
Okay,
it just points out the problems.
Thank you very much, Skip. We have our last witness on this issue, Gail Gate, with the AEL. Is that AEL?
That's AEL, right. My name is Gail Gatton. I hate telling you that.
I'll get it before the session's over.
I know. It's early. We're only a quarter of the way through, right? I represent the Alaska Environmental Lobby, which, as most of you here know, is a coalition of 19 groups statewide representing environmental and conservation issues. And it was great. I mean, I had a prepared speech here I wanted to give you that went into each whereas and talks about the be it further resolves and all that, but I think you've heard most of it. And what seems clear to me is that this is a fairly complex issue, and I think that's what you're hearing here. You're hearing people getting up saying one thing, somebody getting up and saying the other thing. I'm in the best position because I'm the last person to speak. So like, I feel like I'm in a trial court, and I get to do all the rebuttal. And actually, since I'm in that position, I'm going to take advantage of it. And there are a couple of things I'd like to clear up, things I've heard said here today. One is that there has been introduced a Tongass Timber Reform Act. For starters, that has not yet been introduced in federal Congress. My understanding is we probably will see it next week. But it has not been introduced, and all it does, Mr. Clark made some erroneous references to what it does. All the bill does is eliminate 705, okay? It asks for no new wilderness areas. Does not deal with, it has no low-cost sales prohibitions. All it asks for is that this money issue, the subsidy, be put back into the appropriation process. And that's not an unreasonable thing to ask for. There's no other federal monies that do not go through the appropriations process, including our defense budget. And I think that that's the issue that is being addressed here. And if you pass a resolution that basically supports that status quo, you know, and says, no, we think this is great. Let's continue mismanaging. Let's continue sending $40 million a year someplace and not look at what's happening with that $40 million. But that's fiscally irresponsible. And if that was happening on a state level, you can bet that you would all be up in arms at this point in our economy going, oh, wait a minute, what's this guaranteed subsidy? You know, so I think the fact that it's free money from the federal government, it still warrants you to look at that and look at where that money is being spent and be fiscally responsible about it. What the Tongass Reform Act will do, it does not say that you can't get $40 million a year. It simply puts it back into the normal appropriation process. And I think that as a body and as a legislative body for the state, that what you need to address is, do you want to be sending federal Congress a message like this, a message that says, no, we don't want to look at those issues and we don't want to talk about responsibility. We just want to leave things the way it is. And so we send this message off to them, and I wonder what they think when they get back and what they think of the Alaska legislature. And I know you're a responsible body, and that's why I'm asking you to look at this responsibly. One of the other things that I've heard addressed, that I have this whole business of an agreement is an agreement, a couple of things about that. Back in 1980, when this was all going on, some of the national groups did indeed agree, the national environmental groups that were sitting at the table did indeed agree to the bill that came out, because the entire Anilco bill was being held hostage over the Tongass Timber business. Now the local group here, which is SEAC, did not sign on to that, and they represented local issues, and they're the people who are asking even today, you know, to be heard again on this issue. And I agree with Ken Leghorn that a bad law is a bad law, and you don't just leave it and you don't maintain the status quo because that's the easier thing to do. So I guess in closing, I just want to encourage you to look at this seriously, think about what you're saying and what message you're sending as a body to our federal Congress, and take into account all of the things that have come before you today. And I guess, you know, my bottom line is that this is not a good resolution, and I don't think that you do want to be sending this message. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Is there any questions of Gail? Best for last. Thank you, and I'll remember the name.
Suppose they put half that $40 million into rehabilitation of fishing streams and hatcheries and that type of program?
Pardon me? Would I propose we do that? Only if it's going to go through a federal oversight process of where our appropriations are going. Same as, you know, I would say with the timber money.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Senator Joe?
Anywhere but southeast.
Mr. Chairman, I have several amendments.
All right, get your pencils out, gentlemen, ladies. Senator. Is there any other, before we do that, is there any other person wish to be heard on Senate Resolution, a simple Senate Resolution 7? If not, why, the hearings are closed and we're now in mock-up. Senator Jones.
First Amendment would be on page 1, lines 14, 15. Following slot 2, delete all material in spurt, prevent a jobs loss in then existing timber industry of Southeast Alaska by providing compensating timber for that selected by Native corporations. And.
Sir, any objection? Did you got a copy of it, Senator Zara? You got a copy of this? A unanimous consent has been asked. Any objection? No objection. So ordered. Second.
All right. On page 1, line 23.
Page 2.
No.
Line 1.
Page 1, line 23.
23.
Now, this is the state's. And I agree with it. We change timber industry related employment to in the timber industry which depended on national forest timber.
Out of water and red.
Move and ask for unanimous consent. Amendment.
Any objection? No objection, so ordered.
Page 1, line 25. Change timber industry related employment to employment in the dependent timber industry. I would still move and ask for unanimous consent. Amendment.
Objection? No objection, so ordered.
Line 28, change how much funding is necessary to a funding mechanism. We'll move and ask unanimous consent for the amendment.
Any objection? No objection, so ordered.
On line 29, change timber industry related employment to employment in the dependent timber industry. We've been asking unanimous consent for the amendment.
Any objections? No objections. So ordered.
All right. Line 16 through 21. Following timber harvest should delete all material and insert. Be maintained along with timber harvest level of 4.5 billion board feet per decade, mandated by Section 705 of ANILCA and BIA. Move and ask for unanimous consent for the amendment.
Any objection? No objection. So ordered.
Again, line 19. Change harvest level to supply. This bring it consistent with the language of ANILCA, Section 705.
Any objection? No objection, so ordered.
Lines 23 through 24, page 2, delete begins further consideration of ANILCA and insert makes any amendments to Section 705 of ANILCA.
Okay.
Move and ask for unanimous consent on the amendment.
Any objection? So ordered.
On lines 25 to 26, delete R. Max Peterson and insert Dale Robertson.
Honorable Dale Robertson.
Honorable Dale Robertson.
He is new.
Correct. Mr. Peterson, no retired.
Ask unanimous consent. No objection, so ordered.
Do they call those people honorable?
Sure.
That's a simple question.
Some people, some.
Are they something like judges?
Mr. Chairman, just like us.
Just like us.
Senator Duncan.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just propose an amendment for the trial here, see what happens, if I might. I think this is what I want to do. On page 2, line 7. After the word Congress, delete all the remaining language through the end of line 10.
Mr. Chairman.
Or
But just for clarification, you're going to need to do that, aren't you, to address either, because you've taken out or.
Where did that notice of war service? Where do you see?
Mr. Chairman? Through the chair.
Yes, Senator Sturgeon. Has he made his whole amendment, though?
Well, yeah, I have. What's your suggestion, Senator?
All right. Simply, if you would look, whereas the Alaska State Senate believes that either the U.S. Forest Service, then it goes on. You're deleting, are you not, after Congress or the wilderness designation?
Yes.
Yes. Well, if you did that, wouldn't you have to take out either on line five? That was.
Oh, excuse me. You're exactly right. I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So it would read, whereas the Alaska Senate believes that the U.S. Forest Service should honor the Native Timber Industry-related employment in the Tongass National Forest by Congress.
In other words.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
Yeah, that would read correctly. I don't know if you agree with it, but read correctly, okay. Right?
You so moved?
Sure, yes, I did think that.
Mr. Chairman, I really think that it takes the, that's how the amendment. Out of the
section.
It takes the effectiveness of the.
I guess it's what it is, what it amounts to is watering down the resolution to not be quite so feisty and have the flip side. Is that what your intent is?
Well, I think it still gets the point across, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman. I mean, it states very clearly the Alaska Senate believes the U.S. Forest Service should honor the commitments made to timber industry related employment in the National Forest by Congress. And it does not, it is not feisty, if that's the proper word, or as inflammatory as leaving that remaining sentence is, asked them to go into section 703 and repeal the wilderness designations of page 703. And kind of the administration, as I understood what Mr. Lynn said, and I listened to both Mr. Lynn and Mr. Clark, and I understand what you're saying. Mr. Lynn said the administration would prefer that, or suggests, that we don't have that language in there at all. They think that's premature to adopt the language. It's just kind of halfway between what they're suggesting and what others are suggesting. So it appears to me that you still got the same strength to your resolution, the same commitment there, except you're not asking them to go into a separate section of the Act to repeal wilderness designation. You're just asking them to reaffirm their commitment or to honor their commitment to the timber industry-related employment, whatever the proper term is now.
Senator Jones.
Mr. Chairman, the problem with that is that we need to tie the two sections together, because one is because of the other. 703 is 705. And we need to let them know, and send that message back, that if there's something to one side of the compromise, then the other side should go away. We start from ground zero again.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator,
I understand exactly what you're saying. I do. Except I think by taking that off and leaving that first sentence there, I mean, we're not asking them to do anything. We're just saying leave things as they are with your commitment to the timber-related industry or the employment or whatever. You changed the language on me, so I don't have the correct language here. But it just seems to me that that is a little bit inflammatory and may be causing and creating some problems that we don't need to create right this moment. It's only a motion that you...
Senator Sturgeon.
Just briefly. I understand both positions. I happen to think, or I will support the amendment, because the whole thrust of this is, and I had a very similar resolution in last year, if you recall, passed out. It's saying that honor the other. There is an amendment process, you know, use that, but don't come in and change the law. The whole thing says go back and stick with what you did. So I don't really feel this takes away, and it just may keep some feathers from being ruffled.
We need to ruffle some feathers. Are we ready for the question?
We're on the receiving end.
No, it depends.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator,
proceed.
The last.
Maybe this, I think it sort of relates to the whole resolution. Is there any effort by Congress to add additional winter wilderness areas in Tongass National Forest? I guess that's the question.
I guess that's the fear, Senator, that there is, that they're opening up Anilka, that there's a whole new thrust to open up Anelka and to make wilderness areas.
I understand that the bill that's coming out, it will ask for about 100 and some more wilderness, small wilderness areas. Anybody has a copy of that bill away? Mm-hmm. But the one that I've seen.
Senator Lassen, you have the floor.
I think someone made a good point here when they, if in fact, there's, I don't know if there's another bill, but this third district in New York, whoever it is, is addressing only section 705. I think that's what Clark testified on that,
right?
That threat to the whole program. But it was also emphasized that they're only dealing with that part. Now, is there something we don't know? About the wilderness additions or about the changing Anelka or whatever. I mean, is that a distinct possibility? I'm just dealing with 705.
Request to the committee why we'll have Mr. Clark come forward. And he's been pretty close to this issue, and you can clarify that.
Mr. Chairman, Gail Gapman's testimony may have been, certainly she's got a better pipeline into the environmental community than I do. But I meant on my last trip to Washington with Steve Richardson, who's the general counsel of the Wilderness Society, who gave me a copy of January 13th draft of the bill that he claimed that Congressman Morazzi was going to introduce. And it included four principal parts, and I have the bill in my office. Unfortunately, I didn't bring it over. I'll be glad to run across and get it. But it doesn't disprove anything she said. She said that the bill he's about to introduce next week will deal only with 705. And I can't say for a moment that that's not correct. All I can say is that when we prepared the testimony,